Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 193 for April 22nd, 2015. The Usual Suspects. Welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation. We're glad to be back this week. Bob Heil is not with us. He's on the road once again. But we do have the cast of Usual Suspects here. Hello, Gordo.
This suspect is good, and today is Earth Day. So I have all of my quartz crystals from Quartz Fest lined up for you, George. Back to you.
Oh, well, thanks, Gordo. That sounds very exciting. Don, you were talking about Earth Day too, weren't you?
Yeah, we're going to celebrate Earth Day tonight. We have a new sponsor for Ham Nation tonight, just specifically in honor of Earth Day. So get ready for that. It's going to be awesome.
Okay, and we've also got Dale with us tonight, bringing us some videos a little later on. But Dale, I think you've got an announcement about Hamvention, don't you?
Yes, we sure do, George. I'm glad you mentioned that. I was going to bring it up. We have about 11 volunteers signed up to man the Ham Nation booth at this point. And we could use about another 8 or 10, get you on the list. That way everybody only has to work about 2 hours to cover the whole 3 days. I do have exciting news. Just got off a Skype call all the way from New Zealand. Was talking to Simon. He's ZL2 Foxtrot Alpha Echo. He's got a big surprise in store for the guys manning the booth. Can't tell you what it is, but they'll be glad they volunteered. So that's the news, George. Go ahead.
Thanks, Dale. And we'll look forward to seeing you back a little later in the show with those videos. Well, right now, you know, at the top of every show, we've got some short shots in there with Gordo. And I think you're trying to set a new speed record tonight, aren't you, Gordo?
Well, we may, because it's such exciting news, and we have Amateur Television Network over my whatever shoulder this is, left or right, and it's going to be great. But let's take a look and see all the excitement this past weekend. This was the International DX Convention. 850 registered folks. Northern California DX Club put it together with John, Kevin, and Rich in the lead. Tim Duffy, Bob Heil, and other notables were there. And beside the convention, all the happenings were 45 vendors, and that's Janet, KL6 mother, father, showing her expert skill in finding stuff for those hams that just had to get more. That's Chris Wilson, N0CSW, Mr. Fusion, showing off Yaesu. And Flex Radio was there. Let me tell you, when they present a big screen, they mean it. And, of course, we're in Ellicraft territory up there in the Bay Area. The Ellicraft booth was constantly full, showing off their current offerings. Yay, Ellicraft. And that's Scott in the Ellicraft booth showing their new mounts for the KX3 and PX3. And there's Ray. I know he's hiding around there somewhere. That's the ICOM America booth, always packed with the latest of great ICOM gear. Mike Stahl and Myrna, always think of them with M Squared, the antenna folks, and they brought the hardware. Expert Amps USA, that's Elizabeth KA2UCA, and she was showing off their new 1.3 kW amplifier, even a 2 kW line of amps. Wow, all solid state. Alpha Radio had their rotating ring, turn that big antenna. And next generation antennas, well, just move a little bit to the left, and it looks almost like a sunflower, but this is their growing antenna. Just feed it water. I don't know about that, but a way to disguise an antenna. And that's Christian, KF7P of Metalworks. And he brought along a lot of his tower accessories for the Sirius DXers. And we all know Katie. Hey, Katie. And she does tech support for Ham Radio Deluxe. And she was there. So was Ham Radio Deluxe big times. And McLogger DX for DXing and contesting. Wow, what a great program. And tonight we're talking about manual tuners later on in the show. We've got one here live and direct. And inside, you'll see all those variable caps. And time to learn a little CW? Well, there are straight keys, bugs, old telegraph sounders. Look to your right, the two AEA Morris machines. They are worth their weight in gold. So pick one up at the next Ham Fest. Wired communication. This is like Mr. LED, and he's got strings of them. And here he is, Ray and 9JA, ICOM America, talking to Glenn Johnson with the great expedition that we're going to tell you about shortly. And beside Ray sorting things out, we went out to the parking lot. All right, let's head for the parking lot there, Brian. And the parking lot was filled with all sorts of HF antennas. And this was a great mount of fiberglass to keep it separated away. There we go, from the body of the vehicle. That's fiberglass. Great support. We had also rack mounts. Remember, we talked about rack mounts. And many times when they're elevated off the metal vehicle top, they will not load. And getting loaded with great food, the line went fast, and there was great attendees attending to the food lines. Well, the big DX night banquet was well attended. Catch this, $50,000 worth of main prizes, half drawn on Saturday and the other half on Sunday morning. And that's Dr. Glenn Johnson, W0GJ, a great enlightening presentation about the K1N expedition, and that's their whole team. Wow, they drew big applause. We were all happy to work them. N6V was located in the exhibit hall. That's the remotely remote station running remote ham radio, and we heard it on the air big time. And the remote station was located in California, and contacts were made literally around the world. This was a great deal. And finally, a very special group of attendees, all donning the new Heil headsets, even the pink ones. Sarah, we knew you were around. They're from the WA6BK ham station at the elementary school in Fontana. Actually, Beverly, WA6BK, was the call sign of the teacher from Dorothy Grant Elementary School. The Southern California DX Club provided support to get the students all the way up there for the convention. So for those of you that attended Visalia, what a show. And a little later on tonight, we're going to do a little of live on-the-air adjustment of a manual antenna tuner. And weekend after next, I'll be up at the Nevada State Convention, May 1, 2, and 3 in Boomtown, Nevada, where the West Coast CW Confab is also taking place. So see you there. And, of course, we'll see you in Dayton. Back to you, George.
Okay, Gordo. Interesting stuff there, Visalia. I've never been to that convention before. Sounds like they had a blast there, and I believe Val was there, and she'll probably be telling us a little more about that when she's back in here next week. It was good to see Bob made it there, too. We don't know where he is tonight. He's still on the road, you know. Sometimes they take Bob out on the road, and they won't let him come home for a while. So maybe he'll be back with us next week. But, Gordon, I was looking at that tuner there, you know, and we don't like to use tuners when we don't have to. You know, we say cut you a dipole for the right length, but it's not always possible to get away without a tuner. Can you tell us a little more about that one you've got sitting right there?
This, of course, is the MFJ manual antenna tuner. And did you want me to quick demo it now or a little later on in the show? Because it's all hooked up, ready to roll.
Well, let's go ahead and do it now. It looks like it's ready to go there. And
Okay, sounds good. And by the way, thanks to Tracy, WA6ERA, and Jody for the great photos of Visalia. The manual tuner, well, the manual tuner, it can tune up just about anything. First thing you want to do is to make sure you have the correct lead on the back going to your transceiver. Today we're using the ICOM 9100, and you want to make sure that you've got your antenna selector that we have right here that is tuned to the correct antenna you're on. Now, I'm going to turn up the volume, and the first thing we want to do with a manual tuner to get it close to the tune-up spot is listen for background noise. And I'm going to rotate through here, and you're going to hear the background noise come up. I'm going to turn. Nope. 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 Better. Oh, yeah. Hear the difference between this. Now we go to the outside capacitance knobs and rotate them quickly. And now we do the other one. Now we come back on inductance, on received. Yeah, that's the sweet spot. Then we would go ahead and transmit. But I don't dare transmit or else I'll knock myself out of Skype. But this is how you adjust a manual tuner. First tune for maximum noise with both the outside antenna and the rig controls straight up and down. When you get to the spot, click, click, click of maximum antenna noise, then rotate the outside two knobs, touch it up again, and then go to transmit. And later on, we'll tell you about reading the SWR bridge that's built into the tuner. So you tune your tuner by first increasing the audio capabilities of that tuner, pulling out signals, and what in this case, white noise over the air. That's how we do it, George. Back to you.
Good stuff, Gordo. And one thing I have often heard, and you may can verify it there, on that particular tuner you're using there, that is a switched inductor. In other words, there's an inductor in there with several taps, and that's a rotary switch, and it's got multiple positions, so you're tapping in just however much inductance you need. But you don't want to adjust that when you're transmitting. You want to let off that push-to-talk button or key or whatever you're using, then turn your inductor a click and key again. Is that correct?
That is correct. You never want to rotate that inductor, which you can hear here, click, 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 click. You don't want to rotate that on transmit because even with 20 watts, you'll blister those contacts, and then you'll need a whole new rotating channel-changing selector from MFJ. So only on receive do we listen for maximum noise.
Okay, well, thanks for that. Yeah, antenna tuners there. Something we don't like to talk about a lot, but just between you and me, I've got one over here in the rack because my antenna's not resonant on all bands. And it works, you know. It's better if you can cut a resonant antenna, but not always possible. So good demo there on the manual tuner. Of course, there's auto tuners too, and we'll be looking at some more of these in the future. There's a lot of different types out there. Well, now I think maybe we need to get a word from Don before we go to the news.
Yeah, let's do that. You know, another good trick, tuning for max noise works great in a mobile environment as well, especially if you're using a screwdriver-type antenna and a rocker switch without, say, a turbo tuner. That's what I used to do when I had my 706. Before I got the turbo tuner, I would hit that rocker switch up and down to tune for max noise on receive, and then I could go into the SWR setting, the graph on the 706 that I was using, and get for adjust during transmit for lowest SWR. So yeah, tune for max noise first. Works great. All right, class, let's get out our textbooks, shall we? Turn to page 74 because we're going to be talking about butternut antennas. This is good stuff. And DX Engineering recently welcomed butternut to their fine family of products, including all of Butternut's acclaimed 2-band, 6-band, and 9-band antennas. That means all Butternut verticals are now manufactured and sold exclusively by DX Engineering. So what's so special about Butternut? Well, if you've been around ham radio any time at all, you've heard of Butternut. And these Butternut verticals are perfect for the guy who wants to get on the HF bands, but you don't have the space for a Yagi, a dipolar world, big old log periodic. Each design will handle the full legal limit on most bands. They're relatively easy to install and tune, and they offer great HF performance. There are three basic butternut HF verticals. There's the two-band vertical, which is a great 80-40 meter option. It's only 32 feet high. Narrow profile lets it survive winds up to 60 miles an hour. There's an optional 160 meter add-on kit that you can get separately. Then there's the six-band vertical, gets you on 80 through 10. It's only 26 feet tall, means it'll handle winds up to 80 miles an hour. And there are add-on kits for the Warp bands plus 160 and 6 are available too. Then there's the big boy, the nine-band vertical. Could be the most versatile antenna in the whole DX Engineering catalog. And that's a heck of a catalog. Covers 80 through 6 with a radiator, and it's only 26 feet high. There is a 160 add-on kit available separately. Maximum performance, of course, you need a proper radial system for the butternut HF vertical antennas, but that's not a big deal because DX Engineering has radial wires and ground staples. Also, the patented radial plate is an excellent way to tie everything together and make it play like a champ. For installation advice, do not hesitate to contact DX Engineering at the Ohio headquarters and check out the customer service tab at dxengineering.com. And the hams that have used the Butternut's time-tested multiband vertical antennas for decades, and now, since they're built and sold by DX Engineering, you can enjoy the same performance enhanced by DX Engineering's stringent manufacturing processes and attention to detail. And don't worry, DX Engineering will still have all the upgrades and replacement parts you need to keep your classic butternut vertical in tip-top condition. Because once it's a butternut, it's always a butternut, and DX Engineering is going to cover that for you. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. You don't believe it? You get on the phone tonight and you call them. You make your order. So I want that butternut nine-band job with all the hoodlums on it. And if it's in there, if it's there, and chances are it will be, you'll get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern tonight. If it's in stock, it'll be on a trek headed your way. Not tomorrow, not next week, no, tonight. Proven products, expert advice, DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. So grab this catalog. This is an amazing catalog. And also, I want you to go online 24/7 to dxengineering.com because this is a great catalog, but they keep adding things. Like they've added the Linco. I'm not sure Linco's in this catalog. They've added Kenwood. I don't think Kenwood is in this catalog yet either. So this is a great thing to have, but also always go to dxengineering.com. And you can do that at dxengineering.com/hamnation. 24/7, it's a great place to buy all your ham radio toys. DX Engineering, thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation. We could not do it without you. Great people over there at DX Engineering. Tim Duffy, Terry Greiser, just amazing people. You're going to love them. We love doing business with them ourselves. Let's take a look at what's happening in the news world of ham radio, shall we? From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1961, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 22nd, 2015. The latest IARU Monitoring Service newsletter is out with news concerning intruders into the ham bands. Here's Amateur Radio Newsline Stephen Kenford, NAWB.
Among the items covered in this latest issue are the Russian channel markers that have shown up in the amateur radio high-frequency bands. One of these is on 3.756 kHz from TWAPS on the northeast shore of the Black Sea. Its signal is audible every evening, with the actual transmission mode being A3E, which means it puts out a carrier and both sidebands modulated by short tone bursts, which are called pip tones, called master and slave. Earlier reports had pegged its location as being in the Ukraine, but those proved to be inaccurate. Another intruder reported was Radio Air Atria, which appeared on 7.175 MHz with very strong signals in Europe, but with a rather unstable carrier. Also, that an Australian over-the-horizon radar has been heard operating daily on 21.295 MHz using different sweep rates.
You'll find a link to the newsletter in this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. The ARRL reports that the sponsors of the 2015 Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference, or GARIC 2015, have announced that the event has been canceled due to a lack of interest. Seppo Sisato, OH1VR, said that GARIC 2015 registrations were too few and the decision was largely financial. GARIC was set to mark its 10th anniversary this June in Tampere, Finland, where the first GARIC was held. A G2-class geomagnetic storm erupted Friday, April 10th, spawning aurora borealis across the Canadian border into the United States as far south as Colorado. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
At the time the alert was issued, solar storm conditions were still underway with a possibility for more to come. On Sunday the 12th, forecasters at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration boosted the odds of an M-class solar flare to 40%. The reason given was a large and potentially active sunspot region that was emerging over the sun's northeastern limb and it was turning towards Earth. Reaching out more than 120,000 kilometers from end to end, the sunspot group had several dark cores as large as our planet. Of greatest interest was and is the region's potential for flares. Part of the group is sunspot AR2321. NOAA forecasters had estimated a 55% chance of M-class flares and a 20% chance of X-class flares from it.
The space race may be heating up down under, and it could include a spot for amateur radio. Here's Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News.
A group of enthusiasts plan to launch a 100% locally built balloon-carried glider in outback Queensland. This is a possible forerunner to getting the country back in space. Australia once had space launches from Woomera in South Australia, and over the years there's been talk of other launch sites, but nothing appears to have happened. However, Project Thunderstruck, headed by father and son Robert Brand, VK2URB, and Jason, VK2FJAB, has an ambitious venture that promises to see a glider lifted by a balloon to an altitude of 45 kilometres, and this from Longreach, in September. From there, the glider will free fall, reaching supersonic speed for a short time. The Phase 1 balloon and glider flights are to be recorded by telemetry and cameras. A suitable ham package for each phase of the Thunderstruck project is now being sought. In 6 or 7 years, the knowledge gained through Thunderstruck may lead to the launch of CubeSats carrying amateur radio to the planet Mars.
You'll learn more at projectthunderstruck.org. Tom Medlin, W5KUB, has expanded his Tuesday night amateur radio roundtable video webcast to include simulcasting on shortwave over WTWW. WTWW is a 100-kilowatt international broadcaster located in Lebanon, Tennessee. As of April 7th, it began carrying the audio of the W5KUB webcast on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time in the United States, which is 0100 UTC on Wednesday. Shortwave listeners have the option to go to W5KUB.com and join in on the video webcast and chat room. And since many hams got their start in shortwave listening, Tom plans to add a shortwave segment to the show. To watch Amateur Radio Roundtable, go to W5KUB.com and click Live Events. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for over 37 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. For Stephen Kinford and 8WB, Heather MB, KB3TZD, and Graham Kemp, VK4BB, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And now, Dr. Tamitha Scove with the solar update.
Hi. I'm Tamitha Scove with your solar storm forecast for the week of April 22nd. The sun has brought with it the development of no less than 7 active regions this week, but none of them happen to be major flare players at the moment. The best flare we've got is region 2321, and despite its magnetic complexity, it has failed to give us anything other than an Earth-directed solar storm, which it launched on the 18th, which should hit us by the 22nd, which is now, but more on that in a minute. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see the last M-class flare we had was back on the 12th. But since then, it's been pretty much just C flares just here and there, so there's not really been a lot of activity to report. Now, we may not have had much flare activity, but switching to solar storm levels, you can see we actually did have a decent solar storm back on the 10th that lingered in through the 11th. Things quieted down for a little while, but then around the 14th and 15th, we hit a high-speed stream that was actually much stronger and much faster wind than predicted, and this caused extended storming that lasted through the 15th and in through the 17th. Now, things have began to quiet back down, but for that 48 hours or so, the ham radio operator bands were terrible. A lot of degradation, and in some cases were completely unusable. Now, getting back to that solar storm, on the left here, you can see these are difference images showing the sun, and that black region is actually the solar storm lifting off of the sun. On the right, in coronagraphs, these are difference images again, and that green region, that halo surrounding the sun, is actually that solar storm lifting off the sun and coming towards us. So the observations show that this is an Earth-directed solar storm. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, despite the fact that we have a lot of active regions on the Earth-facing disk right now, none of them are M-flare producers. NOAA's only giving us about a 15% chance of an M-class flare over the coming days because all of these regions seem to be reasonably stable. The biggest players are region 2324 and 2325, but we do have some new regions that are rotating onto the East Limb, and if they begin to produce flares, all of these numbers will change. So this looks like it's going to be yet another exciting week. We have that solar storm that we anticipate is going to hit any time now. In fact, we already are seeing some high-speed wind ahead of that solar storm, so it definitely could reach a G2 level. That is a KP of 6 or above. Now, what that means is that you amateur radio operators and you GPS operators, you might see some issues either on the bands or with your GPS. Also, satellite internet and phone might be disrupted here and there, just some intermittent issues. But other than that, aurora photographers, get your cameras out because we might have yet another opportunity to see aurora clear down to mid-latitudes. Oh, and by the way, as of this posting, we are just getting our first M-class flare since April 12th. It's unfortunately from region 2322, so it's rotating off of the West Limb now, so we may not see anything more than that. But hey, at least we've gotten an M-class flare. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
All right. Thank you, Dr. T. We appreciate it. Of course, now, don't forget, she's going to be at Dayton this year at the Antenna Forum on Dayton Friday. And you can watch that live if you can't be at Dayton like I can't this year at icomamerica.com. They're going to be live streaming that. So there you go. Well, before we get into smoke and solder, George, we have a new sponsor on Ham Nation tonight in honor of Earth Day. Yes, today is Earth Day. It's the 45th Earth Day. The first one was in 1970. And we have a new sponsor in honor of Earth Day. Brian, if you'll roll that, please.
Are your hands getting all the support they need? If not, try new Earth Gloves. Yes, Earth Gloves, in the same proud tradition as Earth Shoes. What sets Earth Gloves apart from most mundane mittens? It's their unique construction. You see, Earth Gloves are made totally out of mud, giving you that back-to-the-land feeling you can really grasp. Try new Earth Gloves today. Remember, if it doesn't say the original Earth Gloves, all you've got is a handful of dirt. The FDA has not approved this product to treat or cure any disease. Discontinue if rash develops or experience an erection lasting longer than 4 hours. Warranted or prohibited, taxed or otherwise regulated by law. Not available in Wisconsin.
Whew, boy, you always got to have a disclaimer. Man, that government gets into everything. Well, anyway, so there you go. Congratulations, it's Earth Gloves. It's Earth Day, and now it's smoke and solder. George, you're probably killing trees as we speak over there, aren't you?
Oh, I got to tell you, Don, that was one dirty commercial there.
Thank you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal.
Yeah. Boy, Brian was right on top of that one there. Well, you know, this week we were going to have something from Randy, but he got tied up with some things and didn't really have time to get a video together, but that's okay. I have what I was going to call an oldie but a goodie, but it's not quite that old, Don, so I'm going to call it a recurrent. But anyway, let's take a look at some real cheap ways to receive digital modes for those of you who've never done that before.
Today, we're going to take a look at digital modes on HF, and we're going to do it very simply here. We're just going to listen. We're not going to attempt to transmit. So if you've never worked digital modes before, here's something you can do to kind of get started with it. Or even if you're not a ham and you have a shortwave receiver of some type, you can do this too. First thing we do is we tune to the portion of one of the bands where there's some digital communications going on. On 20 meters down around 14.089 megahertz, you'll find some digital signals of various types. I can hear some in the background there right now. These aren't really sounding very good, and there's a reason for that. The first thing you got to do, if you've got any filtering on your rig, you're going to need to turn that off because it's interpreting the digital signals as being noise. So first thing we'll do is turn off our notch filter here. That lets a little signal through, and also turn off any DSP noise reduction. Now we can hear signals there where before it was just some clicks and chirps. So how do you get started? Well, if you've got a rig like this IC7700 here, you've got a decoder already built in it. The first thing I want to do on this rig is just go into the mini scope here where I can see the signals on the band, and I'll switch over to ready mode, and I'll also turn on the decoder. Now, we can see right here a little display that's going to show us the peaks. You know, ready has two tones to make a signal, and we can see both of these. What we do is just peak them there on the two lines in the rig, and that's how we'll know that we're on frequency. And we can see those two peaks are lined up right there, and it's decoding some ready right now. It's decoding W1AW, the ARRL's flagship station. And you can see a little noise in between transmissions there. That's not unusual. We could turn up our squelch or RF gain there to get rid of that if we wanted to. that's not what I'm here to talk about today. You know, most folks don't have a rig that has a decoder already built in it. So let's just look at this using our regular type of receiver and our PC sound card. So we'll come back out of all this, and we'll just go back into regular sideband mode here. And we'll tune until we hear those RIDI sounds. There, we can hear them right there. Now, what we do is we feed the output of this rig from the speaker jack into the input on our sound card, and then we run some software. And there's several different packages out there. The one I usually use is from Ham Radio Deluxe. It's their Digital Master 7080 package that comes with the program. You can see down here at the bottom of the screen, there's our two tones right there. And they're being decoded up here in the receive window. And we can see other stuff going on the band either side of the frequency we're tuned on, but it's only decoding what's highlighted right here. If I had not tuned to this exact spot, if I was off just a little bit, the tones would sound different, and you'd notice that they're showing up on a different place on the display here. All we got to do is click over here so that it can tune back in and pick up right there. Now, I've got the AFC mode turned on. You can see the button up here at the top, and what that does is it'll automatically, within a certain range, adjust the frequency here up or down as need be, because a lot of times both stations that you're hearing here will be on slightly different frequencies, and the software can automatically retune to get right on top of the frequency that that particular station is transmitting on. Right now, W1AW is just IDing. I suppose he's waiting for someone to come back to him. And we could do that, but we're not transmitting today, so we're just going to listen here for a minute and see. And there's a station picking him up now into ESP. And you notice right there, there's a slight shift in frequency between these two stations, but our software is correcting itself to keep everything tuned in properly. Now, this is the middle of the morning, and there's not a lot of activity right now. At night, and particularly during a contest, you'll see these signals all up and down the display here. RIDI's not the only mode there is, so let's take a look at another really popular digital mode. And that's PSK31. And I've changed frequencies here a little bit to try to find some PSK31, and I think I found some signals there. Same thing applies here. If you've got any filtering on, you better turn that off, or else it's going to kind of cancel out your tones. We'll see our PSK31 signal right here, and you notice it's much narrower than the RIDI signal was, so it doesn't take as much bandwidth. And we're decoding right now. It looks like it's W4RSD. Now, the band's not very crowded this morning. Typically at night, you would see these signals just filling up the display here. You'd find one you're interested in, go click on it, and you'll notice every now and then there's some characters that don't belong in the decode here. That's because the signal has just dropped, or some noise has come in there and it just can't quite make it out. And these are very weak signals here. I can barely hear them, but the software is decoding it. Now, here's another station up here. I think he's probably running a different mode. If we click on him, we can take a look. Yeah, we're not getting anything there. Now, let's go look for another popular digital mode, probably the oldest one. This is CW, or Continuous Wave, and it's Morse code. We can see several stations on here right now. Let's just pick out a strong one and go click on him and see what he's saying. Now, since a human is sending the CW signal here, his timing might not be exactly on the money like a machine would be, so the software could have a little more problems decoding it. We've got two different signals going over there now. We can just click on whichever one we're interested in. Now, amateur traffic's not the only thing you're going to find on RIDI. Right here on 8.472, I'm picking up WLO, which is a ship-to-shore station located in Mobile, Alabama. You can see right now they're sending the weather forecast. Now, there are a ton of digital modes out there. Digital Master 780 decodes a lot of them, but there's a lot more, and some of them are encrypted. You'll never be able to decode them, but it's a lot of fun. So tune around, see what you can hear, run it into your software, and see if you can decode it. It can be a lot of fun. Little quick, I wouldn't necessarily call it tutorial, just a demo on decoding some digital modes. As I mentioned, there's a lot of different ones out there. I think probably the ones you'll run across most are probably RIDI and PSK31. And there's a lot of different software besides just that Digital Master 780. Another real popular one is FL Digi. I've used that with the Raspberry Pi before. I think we even looked at that here, but a number of different packages out there that allow you to do this kind of stuff. And it's not that difficult. Like right there, I was just coming out of the speaker output, going into the line input on my sound card. Work like a champ. You can even do it with just, say, a microphone stuck up to the speaker. You know, that will even work. But, of course, the more direct path you got, the better there. Well, I wanted to ask you guys before we get on into the contest here tonight. You know, last week we were talking about the rookie roundup. Did any of you work that this weekend or hear any rookie stations on?
Gordo here. And, and there were many of the rookies out there, plus many of the old-timers working brand-new stations, licensed less than 2 years. So it was good. The rookie roundup was a lot of fun. Devon Day School up in Long Beach, they worked 80 or 90 contacts on 10 meters. So 10 meters was smoking this past weekend for the rookie roundup.
Oh, that's a good deal. I listened around a little bit. I never really made any contacts. I did hear some on there, and there was, you know, there was a good bit of activity going on. I really should have taken the time out and made some contacts to, you know, give them one more to put on the list there. But, I didn't. I'm not a big contester, but, you know, when you can help out someone else like that, it's a good thing to do. Anyway, let's get on into the contest. You know, last week we had some weird stuff on there. And by the way, Gordo, did you get the Sugru that I sent you?
I did. In fact, I have it just about ready to go in place on a pesky cord on a piece of electronics that began to fray. And I will give you a full report. But it looks like it's going to work well. Thank you for sending me the goo.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I look for a report on that because I've only used it, you know, that just what we saw there on the show last week. I did actually do one other thing with it. It wasn't anything large. So just the little mount on my dashboard, you know, I've got a heads-up display for my IC7000. And it just kept wanting to tilt over. So I put a little piece of that rubber up under it to hold it in position. Seems to work okay. But the other thing that I talked about was the alkaline batteries. Remember we were dropping those and listening for them to bounce to determine the state of charge on them? Well, I asked the question, what electrolyte chemical is used in an alkaline battery? And we had a winner on that. It was John Cusick, AI6IG, and he said it's potassium hydroxide. And that's correct, John. You won the Morse code Breaking the Barrier book, courtesy of MFJ here. It teaches the Kosh mode to help you get your CW speed up to the higher numbers there. So we'll be getting that out to you this week. But for next week, well, we've got another question here, and you might notice I'm talking on a different microphone tonight, and what does it usually mean when I'm talking on a different microphone? It's a chance that we're going to give it away, and that's what we're going to do. This is the Heil IC10 along with the new lighted base. Let's just take a look at it here. Bob's shown it to us before. It's nice. Look at this, Gordo, if you hit the push-to-talk button.
Oh, that is great.
It smiles at you. Yeah. PR10
And nice sounding microphone, nice and compact too. And the desk stand is such here that I don't have to lean over. It's, you know, just like using, say, a boom stand here. Really works just as well. So someone's going to win this, and it might as well be you. And if you'd like to win it, well, then you just need to answer this question for me. What was arguably the first digital mode? And if you think you know that, then send your answer to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner. So one more time, what was arguably the first digital mode for amateur radio? hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Somebody's going to win this microphone, and I hate to give it up, but, you know, that's kind of part of the deal. I get to use it maybe once or twice, and then we ship it on out. I did want to mention before we go on, though, Tommy and I are going to be shooting the next episode of Ham College tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time. That'll be at live.amateurlogic.tv. If you'd like to watch, come on over, and we're going to help those who don't have their amateur technician exam class license study for it. And for those of you who already do, well, we're going to help you review a little bit, because some of these things you kind of forget about. If you've been licensed for a while, you don't think about some of these rules and different portions of the exam that maybe you passed years ago. So hop on over and join us tomorrow night, live.amateurlogic.tv. Well, I know we've got Dale standing in here. He's been waiting around since the first of the show, and he's got some exciting videos for us tonight. So, Dale, why don't you take it away?
Okay, George. Yeah, we've got a few good videos. I wanted to say I enjoyed your video on the digital modes there earlier. We use FL Digi here. It's a fantastic program. Really works well. And in fact, if you check it out on the Yahoo groups for FL Digi, I wrote a program that it's actually an Apple script that will call MacLogger DX and get all the information about a site, and then turn around and log the contact for you automatically using a macro. So it's a pretty slick program, and it's very expandable like that, and very scriptable. So cool. Check it out, FL Digi. We like that. Hey, we did have a nice shack tour video for you tonight. We've got a really creative field day promotional trailer. And there's some special event coverage from the Lone Star State tonight. So let's jump in, and we'll take a look at a trailer that was produced by Brian Davis. He's W9HLQ. He was promoting Field Day at Whiskey 9 Alpha Alpha. That's the club station operated by the Hamfesters Radio Club. That's in Crestwood, Illinois. That is a very good example of some of the creative things you can produce using software right out of the box on either the Mac or the PC. It's pretty much automatic. You just supply the video and the pictures and let the computer do the rest. So you might want to think about promoting your club's field day operation this year. Thanks to Club Secretary Gene Phillips, W9PNG, for sharing the video with Ham Nation. Well, now let's take a shack tour. Larry Jacobs, WA7Z Baker Oscar, show me your shack.
WA7ZBO, and this is my shack. In Utah, radios often share space with tons of food storage. I think we're the prepper state. On the rack is a Drake Sea Lion I bought new in the mid-70s. Still works like new, too. The operating position is comfortable with great entertainment. An ICOM 756 Pro 2 covers the HF bands, while an ICOM 746 Pro is dedicated to 6 and 2 meters. And finally, an ICOM 2820 finishes the lineup covering UHF. Microphones include a Heil ICM, a Heil Traveler headset, a Sennheiser MD421 left over from my former life producing videos for Union Pacific Railroad, and a great D104 driving that Drake.
Yeah.
The antenna system is simple yet effective. A 40 through 10 meter trap dipole, and an ICOM remote tuner feeding 100 feet of wire. Sorry, Bob. Got to have something for that tuner button on the ICOM to do. When mobile, I drive a custom Astro van pushing a little Tar Heel down the road, and a crew cab dually, which lets me take ham radio on the road, which also lets me enjoy another hobby, cooking and barbecue contest, and cooking for my friends, which led me 10 years ago to take my father, Jake, W7DBO, on his last Sam's Radio Hams gathering in Pahrump, Nevada, before his key fell silent. When I was there, I volunteered to teach Dutch oven cooking to the group. No, I didn't feed them that, but they were well fed. In preparing the food, I found a young man in the audience and turned him into my sous chef. I believe his name was Gordon. 73, wow. This is WA7ZBO, standing by and listening.
I remember
that. Thank you very much, Larry. You've got some nice vintage gear there, and made me remember the great Swan 240 single sideband rig I used both in the shack and in a VW Bug back in 1965. A lot of fun. You hear state parks on the air on many special events, and quite often, in fact, on the weekends in the summer on HF. And tonight we'll take a look at how they do it in Texas. With the report for Ham Nation, here's Terry, W5PCJ.
Hello, Echo 5, Tango, Romeo, Bravo, and let me get your call one more time from my log.
Kilo Echo 5, Tango, Romeo, Bravo, is that Roger?
That's a Roger.
That's not
USL,
a bad little wagon. Where'd you find that?
eBay.
Huh?
Okay,
eBay. Really? My
sign is Kilo 5, Mike. It's a special event call for Mississippi Kilo Party, and we'll have a certificate available.
It even...
Good afternoon. I'm Bill, Innate LTD, and we are participating in the Texas State Parks on the Air contest. We are at Sheldon Lake State Park, about 20 or 25 miles northeast of Houston, Texas. And we are Oak Forest Amateur Radio Club, operating under the call sign KE5TRB. Today we have on the starting from left to right is Richard KF5RSA, Terry W5PCJ, and Dick N5SPU. And we've had a couple of visitors who have come and gone throughout the day. We always have visitors who stay for a short time and have to leave or want to leave.
Hi, This is Terry, W5PCJ, and I'm running the Kenwood TS-570 on a 40-meter dipole, and I've made 12 contacts with Texas State Parks on the air.
Okay, so we're up to 12 contacts. Not bad. Hopefully we'll make a lot more as the day progresses on.
I'm Richard, KF5RSA. I'm here at Sheldon Lake State Park. Participating on 20 meters on my ICOM IC7000 for the Oak Forest Amateur Radio Club. I have had about 8 contacts, no contacts to specific state parks, but about 8 contacts spread between Mississippi and Missouri. I'm having a great time, looking forward to making more contacts. I'm using a buddy pole up about 20 feet, 18 to 20 feet, with some Wolf River coils on it, and it seems to be working just fine on 20 meters.
Yeah, I guess all the Missouri and Mississippi contacts are due to the Missouri and Mississippi QSO parties this weekend.
That's correct. That's correct. Oh, and like 20 is quite full with those folks making their QSOs, quite busy.
Now, here's the buddy pole setup, but instead of using the buddy pole coils, they're trying out Terry's Wolf River coils in the setup. I don't know how well you can see that against the bright background. At the end of this video, I'm going to stick a few still pictures in. You'll probably be able to see the antennas better on the still pictures. Okay, there's the feed point to the 10-meter inverted V and the 15-meter dipole. And in the upper left, you can see the feed point to the 40-meter dipole. And on top of the 10/15-meter antenna is a 2-meter, 70-centimeter vertical we're using for the talk-in frequency. So if anyone wants to come and visit this Texas State Parks on the Air, we can get on. They can get on 2 meters, and we can talk them in.
Well, that's the end of the audio on the video, so we'll just sort of take it out. Thanks, Terry. We appreciate it. This state park on the air was the work of the Oak Forest Amateur Radio Club. That's in the Houston area. This would be a good time now to go ahead and clear up some misunderstandings about how to submit a video for use on Ham Nation. The best method for you to use is to post the video on YouTube, then send us a link to that video. Some people have used Dropbox in the past. Occasionally we get a Dropbox video. This has also caused a problem sometimes when Brian attempts to play it back over the internet. So if you could just put your video on YouTube and send us the link, that would be better. We've also had playback issues sometimes when we've been sent a link to a website from the local club. Sometimes those lock up and do not feed well during the broadcast. So, again, if you can get it on video, get it on YouTube and get us the link, everything will work out real well, I think. And what we did this time is I actually downloaded them from those two sources and uploaded them myself onto my YouTube channel, trying to make life easy there for Brian. Well, before we go now, I've got a quick reminder. If you're going to Ham Nation in Dayton this year and you'd like to volunteer, I hope you can do that within the next week here. If we can get everybody's volunteer email by around the 1st, we'll get a list of the proposed schedule out right away. And then we'll give you 3 or 4 or 5 days to make any swaps or do anything you would like, and then we'll put out a final version and get it to Simon, ZL2FAE, who will be coordinating the volunteers locally there in Dayton. And he's got a surprise for you, too, so don't forget that. And it's time to get your rigs tuned up, get those antennas peaked. The Ham Nation HF After Net Show controllers are sponsoring a tremendous special event for the bicentennial broadcast of Ham Nation. Ham Nation at 200. That's going to be around the end of May. We're hoping to see Mike WT6H on Ham Nation here real soon, maybe next week, I hope, to give you all the details. And you're really going to enjoy it. A lot of certificates and awards and things like that. You're going to have a lot of fun. So we can always use your video from your club or from your own personal experience in future Ham Nation video segments. Hope you can get them into us. We can use some right now. And we'll have a new Show Me Your Shack, and we can use more photos, too. So go ahead and send them in to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. Now, Amanda has questions from the chat room, but first, we're going to check in and find out what's new at ICOM.
Out from the shack and into the sun. Brighten your day with ICOM's selection of handhelds, mobiles, and HF rigs. Step outside with ICOM's ID51A Plus Digital Dual Bander. Features include free downloadable RSMS1A Android app, near-me repeater function for D-Star as well as analog repeaters, and integrated GPS. Hit the road with ICOM's analog IC2730A mobile or the digital ID5100A with internal GPS. Both radios include optional Bluetooth capability for hands-free operation, 50 watts output power on both VHF and UHF, and a large backlit screen for high-contrast viewing. Get mobile with ICOM's IC7100 D-Star radio, which provides multiband and all-mode communications and an angled control head and touchscreen for user-friendly operation. For solid HF operation this season, try ICOM's IC7600. This rig offers advanced DSP technology and three IF roofing filters, dual watch on the same band, and LED backlighting on an ultra-wide 5.8-inch display. Let ICOM brighten your day with their selection of handhelds, mobiles, and HF rigs. Make sure you visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur today for more information on ICOM's complete line of amateur radio products.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And also learn how you can win the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And for April, the grand prize is going to be the ID51A Plus dual band, dual watch handy talkie with D-Star, built-in GPS, Neo repeater list up, micro SD card for voice and data storage and data cloning, plus a whole lot more. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation for the official rules and to check out all of ICOM's previous drawing winners and sign up. Good luck. And don't forget to follow ICOM America Incorporated on Facebook and Twitter. ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Go register after this episode and each episode of Ham Nation. And now it's come to the end of the show, and it's time to get Amanda in here and see what people have been talking about in the chat room tonight. Boy, we are matching outfits almost tonight, Amanda.
Oh, just about, except for I don't have any cool logos on mine, unfortunately. Oh. I'm not as loved as you. No, kid, I'm not. I'm just kidding. Anyhow, first, I got a couple of shout-outs to do here. Sorry, I have to bring this back up. So, Sailor Lion would like to let us know that his brother, Mark, got his technician license, and his call sign, well, he has a regular call sign, but his vanity call sign is going to be W3MTG. So, congratulations, Mark. Glad to have you into the ham world there. Also, with that, KC1DVQ, Jeffrey just got his general license, and I think that he got his technician and general license the same day, and he was really excited to be on, getting ready to be on the air. So congratulations there, Jeffrey. Way to go, you guys. And other than that, oh, one other announcement. Katie, don't choke me for this. Katie Allen, WY7YL, she used to be with HRD, but she has announced her departure. And I do believe it's because she's going to go and fulfill her dream of being a professional ballerina. No, I'm kidding. Anyhow, Katie, thanks for all of your...
Wow, that's my dream too. What are the odds?
Oh, I know she's cracking up about that. I really hope so, Katie, please. No, I think she's taking a job closer to home, but can still get out of home at the same time. So congrats to her on that, and thanks for all your work at HRD. And with that, some questions. Let's get to them. All right. Gordo, I'm going to send this one to you because I know that you do a lot with APRS. So VE7ORA has a 2 meter, 70 centimeter rig in his truck with a half wave, antenna. And he's thinking of adding a Bitronics APRS tracker with built-in 8-watt transceiver. He says, will I have coupling issues? He wants APRS tracker to be separate from other rig. Do you have any suggestions?
No, that antenna should work great with the Bionics package. Bionics output's just looking for that 2 meter antenna, 144.39, and almost anything will get a good signal out onto the APRS airways. So I think he'll be good. But if he has questions, simply check with Bion of Bionics. And Bion's a great guy that will be able to give him even more technical ideas on setting that station up.
Very good. Thank you so much for your answer there. All right, let's go to George. George, how does one remove a surface mount RF chip off a board without damaging the board or chip? And that's from Kevin, ZL1KFM.
Well, it depends on what kind of RF chip he's talking about. If he means an RF transistor, one of the little, I guess the CBers call them pills. They look almost like an aspirin with some copper tabs coming out of them. You need to be real careful when messing with those because the ceramic that's used on there is very poisonous, and you don't want to scratch that stuff and accidentally inhale it. But to remove it, I think probably the best way to do that is going to be a vacuum desoldering iron or a desoldering station where you can heat it up and vacuum the solder out of the out from around the pads there, because you can try using solder wick or something like that, but I think you're going to have trouble getting it completely out of there. Just using that, maybe you can, but try working it real easy. Maybe heat up the tab well and slip a screwdriver under one corner, a very small one, or else you're going to sink away all the heat, and just pry the tab up over it. Try not to damage the PC board. You don't really care about the old chip, I would assume, because it's probably bad. But no, Don, no. Not like that. Not on my watch.
Oh boy.
Okay, but
can
I mean,
hear the Dawn disclaimer again? Just so no, never mind. Yep. Well, thank you, George, for your insight to that. I appreciate it. And all right, another question for Gordo here, and this one's kind of complex a little bit. This guy, he lives in an apartment. And he's getting RF, obviously, into his smoke detectors, anything from his 2 meters up to 10 meters. He's wondering, is there anything he can do to help try to avoid getting into his apartment building smoke detectors?
Oh, absolutely. The simplest trick is don't transmit. That's not going to work.
Take the batteries out.
The best bet is if he can move that 2 meter antenna, get it at least 6 to 8 feet away from any common wiring up in the attic, and using a ton of these little tiny ferrite chokes on some of the common attic wiring will really help. And to run less than 50 watts if he's on a base station, maybe more like 5 watts out of a handheld. And speaking of handhelds, we need everyone's input on overseas orphans. That is, overseas orphan handhelds. So if you're working one of the new non-name brand handhelds and you're either for them or against them, let me know, wb6noa@arrl.net. So for this one, though, he may want to try a small little handheld to reduce the power. Then he's not going to set off all those smoke detectors.
Very good. And other than that, just send out some apology letters because you never do know. Jeff and I lived in an apartment for a really long time. Sometimes we made security cameras you know, do wiggly lines and flip upside down. Other times our neighbors were pounding on our door saying their TVs weren't working. And it was definitely times we were on the HF band. So sometimes old apartment buildings, especially with their wiring, you never know what the electrical is in that situation. So have some apologies ready. Send wine if possible. Just kidding there. All right. I have one more question here. Don, if you would like to take this one. I don't have a ham call for this guy. Gainwam would like to know, how high up can you go with an antenna? He says he lives less than a mile away from the airport. How high can you go with an antenna?
Ooh, you know, there are rules about that, and I used to fly airplanes. I should know that. Your best bet would be to check with the FAA on that. I don't know exactly what the regulations are and how far. I think if he's a mile away from the airport, he can probably go about as high as he wants to. I mean, if he's probably not going to go more than 50 or 60 feet anyway. I wouldn't think that'd be an issue being a mile away from the airport. But always best to check with the FAA. Or call the airport, talk to someone at an FBO. That's a fixed base operator. That's basically that's a gas station for airplanes. That's where pilots come in and they. That's what it is. Pilots come in and they land their plane. They landed at an FBO. That's basically a gas station for airplanes. Call someone at your local airport. If you can't find an FAA number, someone at a local airport should be able to tell you that, or be able to look it up for you, or point you to that. A mile away. Probably not that much of an issue for a relatively short antenna like what we hams use, Amanda.
Okay, thank you very much. And I bet George has some input on that too. But I do have to give a shout out. Someone in the chat room asked me, into KOJ, I would love to say hello to your daughters tonight. Reagan, Alora, and Savannah, I believe I got their names right. Hello, thank you for watching Ham Nation with your father. And we really hope you guys get licensed soon and that we can talk to you very quickly. With that, George, did you have any input on the antenna question?
I would say not over 200 foot under any circumstances, but I don't really know that close into an airport. But, you know, that sounds kind of like a Gordo question to me.
You know, there are calculations, and I'll tell you what. When I'm researching all the comments coming up from orphan handhelds from China, when I'm researching those comments, I'll look up and see what that angle is. But I agree with Don. I think more than a mile away, probably 50 or 60 feet, which is just great for most modest ham antennas. But I'll check it out.
Very good. All right, you guys. That's about all I have. I'm trying to look through chat here to see the frequencies for tonight's nets. Not seeing them yet. Do drop in, of course, for EchoLink. And I think they're at 14 to, you guys, I'm
265. Sorry. 265. I think I saw 265, okay. Yeah, for 20 is probably 265. Yeah, 14265.
Okay.
Yeah, D-Star, reflect 14, module C. Cheryl is going to be on 80 meters at 3847. And 40 meters, I'm not sure, around 7.278, or maybe Gordo found them there.
I think I found them on 7290. I'm listening. Wait a minute.
Going left to right.
Yeah, I think 7290. If not, there's somebody else there. But anyway, 7278.
Antenna adjustment level. The third knob is the phase adjustment.
Talk to anybody. I'll talk to anybody. I don't care.
Roger that. All right, 73, everyone. I'll see you next week, and then we'll see you in Nevada May 1, 2, and 3. And, of course, don't forget Dayton. And wear your pins. Look at this. The new pins are out. Let me get them. There we go. Joe Levine. Let's see. 8JRK.
It's upside down, Gordon. Turn it over. Yeah.
Anyway.
Turn it over. It's upside down. Turn it over.
See you next week.
Oh, that was good. That was good.